Oh, boy, is this going to be so much fun. Why? Well, dear students, in this presentation, we encapsulate the entire semester. We place the entire concept of investing into one presentation. Because in this presentation, we discuss risk versus return. Risk versus return. The eternal tug of war. The eternal struggle. Do you want to eat well? Or do you want to sleep well? And we find that, assuming we don't panic, take a long-term view, don't run for the exits when things don't look enticing, the news has been good. We should do well. Stick with us, huh? Okay. Slide number 35, investment return revisited. Remember we discussed the idea of return, rent, dividends, interest, capital gains. Over the long term, and again, we're going to ignore real estate here, and that gets the real estate investors really angry, but as we said, we're going to concentrate on securities in this semester, so stick with us here. Over the long term, equities, stocks, have produced the best returns. 8 to 9, 10. Remember, they've actually done better, but let's just say 8, 9, 10. Fixed income securities, bonds, have done 4 to 6 for treasuries and munis, 6, 7, 8 for corporate bonds. Right now they're paying a lot less, but that'll change in the future, hopefully. Again, the same thing was true is short-term investments, cash, 2 to 4, 5%, right now 1. And mutual funds were more or less, often less, reflect the underlying assets they invest in. You got that. Good. Now, let us take a look at a growth chart of a dollar's worth of investments from 1926 to 2016. And what we see that stocks have done pretty darn well, folks. A dollar. Now, I want you to ignore small company stocks for now. It is true that small company stocks do better than large company stocks, but they are far more volatile. And there's a survivorship bias built into this data. What does that mean? It means we're only counting the small company stocks that didn't die, because most small company stocks don't live forever. They either get gobbled up by somebody else or they disappear. So even the people who make these statistics will tell you, yes, there's a bit of a bias in there. So just ignore small company stocks. But notice that a dollar put into large company stocks back in 1926 has turned into almost 5,000. That's called exponential growth. And this is a logarithmic scale. And I wish they didn't use logarithmic scales, because what that does is that fools people. I mean, look at this. It goes from 1 to 10 to 100 to 1,000 to 10,000 to 100,000. In other words, every unit is not a factor of 1. It's a factor of 10. And this is how we measure earthquakes. That's why people don't understand that a 4 and then an 8, that 8 is not twice as large as a 4. It's 10 to the 4th power, or 10,000 times larger than a 4. So stocks have done well, right? Bonds have done $120, not bad, but oh boy. And then treasury bills have barely kept up with consumer price index, inflation. You see? But these little downturns that look little here are not little. There's 2008, folks. It looks little, but no, it wasn't. This is a logarithmic scale, so as it gets larger, these little bumps are big bumps. But it does say a lot for stocks, doesn't it? If we have a long-term perspective. Now, this next slide, I love to show people who can't wait to invest in gold. They just, oh man, you don't understand. Anything else is just vaporware. Gold is the only real asset there is. Oh yeah? Yeah, sure. Sure, buddy. Look at how well it's done. Over 200 years! A growth of a dollar. Again, there's that same logarithmic scale. has turned into $22 million for stocks, $39,000 for bonds, which again is pretty good, but stocks have done a whole lot better. Treasury bills have actually done much better than they did in the previous slide. They've done much better than inflation in this case. But look at gold. Gold has barely kept up with inflation, and sometimes gold has done really poorly. Gold tends to do well when people believe the world is going to end. 1860s, yeah, Civil War, 1930s, 1970s, when disco was around. Boy, that was, you young folks just don't believe how dangerous disco was. You just don't believe me. And then look at what it did. From 1981, when it hit $800 an ounce, to 1999, when it hit $250 an ounce. And then it skyrocketed in the 2000s when, again, 9/11 and the world was going to end. But since has come back down, not to where it was in 1999, certainly, but it doesn't pay rent, it doesn't pay dividends or interest. Later. But if you get any of your brother-in-laws or uncles are saying the only real investment is gold, show them this slide and say, well, what would you rather invest in, dad or brother or whatever, uncle? Yeah, right. Investment risk. Okay, so now, we've looked at return. Now let's revisit risk. Well, dear students, it is no accident. It is no accident that stocks and bonds have produced better returns in short-term investments. They have to. Why? Because if they didn't, why would investors assume the higher risks of stocks and bonds? The answer is they wouldn't. They would just assume what is called the risk-free rate of return. And so at any given time, the risk-free rate of return is often quoted as the three-month U.S. Treasury bill, the return on guaranteed short-term investments. If you could do better than that, than stocks or bonds, by getting something that's risk-free, wouldn't you do it? Yeah, you would. Anybody would. You want a risk premium. You want a risk premium. You want something that will reward you for taking on that extra risk. And that's exactly what a risk premium means. The reward for bearing the extra risk of the investment above and beyond the risk-free rate of return. Make sense? Did I say that correctly? I'm not sure. Read it over again. Make sure I didn't say it funny. But it makes sense, folks. They have to do better. Stocks and bonds have to do better, or we would all simply put our money into short-term investments. Right? Yeah. So now what we're going to do is take a look at the risk premiums on slide 39. And it turns out that, if we invested in stocks, again, we're going to ignore small company stocks. But look at this. The average return, remember we said 8, 9, 10%? From 1926 to 2006, the average return, 2016, is almost 12%. That's the average of the Standard & Poor's 500, and what is that? We'll discuss that later on, what it is. But the U.S. Treasury bills have returned 3.6%, which is the risk-free rate of return over the last 90 years. And so the risk premium for stocks has been about 8%, a little over 8%. Investors have come to expect over 8% better than short-term investments to invest in stocks. Now, is it a guarantee that it's going to continue going forward? No, 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 no. But it's a pretty good track record, don't you think? Bonds have done, not so bad. 6.5 return for corporate bonds, 6.2 for government bonds, remembering that they're paying a lot less now. So that translates into 2.9, 2.6 risk premium above treasury bills, above short-term investments. So the news so far has been pretty darn good. By taking on the extra risk of stocks and bonds, we've done pretty well. In fact, stocks have done very well for us. Risk versus reward. Risk versus return. Do you want to eat well or do you want to sleep well? Slide 40. Investment return, as we said, is very straightforward to measure. How much did you start with? How much did you end with? That's your return. How long did it take you to get there? But measuring how much risk you took to receive that return is much more difficult, folks. In fact, as we've already said, it's not possible. We can approximate it. We can give it a number and say, you know, this is what's happened in the past, but we cannot anticipate what it's going to be like in the future, and we certainly can't know what is going to happen to our investments. We have to look at the past and be prepared for the times when they don't do as well as we expect them to do. Each year, the investment community measures the average annual return and the amount of variance from the average return. Using statistics, the resulting measures of risk are called variance and standard deviation. I know. Math. Look, don't run for the exit. You're not going to do any of these calculations. Slide 41. We'll leave the calcs for your statistics class. Suffice to say that the higher the variance in standard deviation, the riskier the investment. The higher the variance in standard deviation, the more the investment return will deviate from the average annual return. Which is a fancy way of saying, look, they've done 9% or 10% or 5% over the last 30 years. But in any one year, do you actually get 9%? No, it might be 17 minus 4. It jumps all over the map. The standard deviation, the variance is wide. And all these scary little math symbols scare you, but they're really not that difficult. I wish they wouldn't use all these Greek symbols to scare people. But what you do is you take the return from any one year, from years 1 to N, meaning, you know, 20 years, 50 years, whatever. You take the return, and then you subtract it from the average return. That's what the bar means. The bar means the mean. And then you square it. Why do you square it? To get rid of all the negative numbers. See, if you added the positive numbers and the negative numbers, you'd wind up with zero, usually. You'd zero themselves out. So you square it so that you get rid of the negative numbers. Then you sum it all up. That's what that funky backwards E means. It's sigma. Right? Then you divide by the number of years minus 1. Why number of years minus 1? Take your statistics class and understand that. But that's the variance. And then we reverse the square. We take then the square root of the variance to get the standard deviation. And look, folks, again, you don't have to do any of these calculations. Forget it. Don't worry about it. These are just fancy schmancy terms for you can lose a lot of money. You understand? That's all we're saying. The higher the variance, the higher the standard deviation, the greater the chance that you're not going to get what you expected to get in any one year.
So what can we do with this information? How can this knowledge about variance and standard deviation help us to make informed decisions when we invest? Slide 42. This is a frequency distribution chart. It's a distribution of annual returns for common stocks from 1926 to 2008. And it shows how each individual year did. So, for example, let's look at 2018. It happened to be a down year between the Standard & Poor's 500, and we'll discuss what that is later on, as we said. It returned a return between 0 and minus 10%. 2016 and all these other years were between 10 and 20%. 2017, actually a pretty darn good year, was between 20 and 30%, as was 2009. So this was the first year of Agent Orange? Orange Trump. What is his name? Trump. I'm sorry, Trump. And this was the first year of Obama's presidential run. And they made a big deal about Trump's first year, but Obama's was better. politics. Poly means many, and ticks are blood-sucking insects. 2013 was between 30 and 40%. 1958, 1954, those were really big years in the 1950s. Were very, very heady days for the United States stock market. 1931, 2008, yeah. So you see, in any one year, you don't know where the return's going to be, but they tend to bunch up in the middle here between 0 and 20 and 30%. Does this resemble anything that you may be familiar with? Yes, we'll come back to that in a second here. But notice, the general pattern has been about 3 years up and 1 year down, right? 4 years up, 1 year down. Now, it doesn't work out that way. In fact, some people say, oh, it's 2018's a down year. That means 2019's going to be up. Wrong. Look at 2000. Before 2000, the stock market went up in two directions, up and way up, right? And then in 2000, it went down for the first time in many years. And everyone thought, okay, it's going to go up again. 2001, it went down again. And then 2002, it went down again. 3 years in a row, right? 1971 and 2 are good years, and then 1973, down between 10 and 20%, and everyone thought, okay, and then 1974 was even worse. So don't try to predict what's going to happen in the next year. That's the takeaway, isn't it? In any one year, you don't know what's going to happen. The standard deviation is quite large. Now, let's get back to what we originally asked for. Does this distribution look like anything that you're familiar with? Indeed, it does. Slide 43.
The normal distribution is what the statisticians call it. Everyone else calls it the bell curve. In the real world, folks, nature has been kind to us in many situations because many items follow a normal distribution. There are many in the middle, around the average, and then as you get out to the extremes, you get fewer and fewer. So investment returns turn out to mirror a normal distribution over time. There's an average return, and as we said, the average return for stocks over the last 90 years has been almost 12%. But did you get 12% any of those years? Very rarely. And what we do is we take a look at the variance, the standard deviation, and we find that in any given year, there's about a two-thirds chance. That's what this, I know, why do they use these symbols, sigma? That's the small sigma. There's a two-thirds chance, about 68%, little more than two-thirds, two-thirds chance that you will be within minus one and plus one sigmas, standard deviations. You'll be within plus or minus standard deviations, which means there's about a two-thirds chance that you're going to be either up to almost 32% or down to minus 8%. You see that? There's a 95% chance that you'll be within two standard deviations, which means there's a 95% chance that you'll be within 52% and negative 28%. And then there's a greater than 99% chance that you'll be within three standard deviations, plus 72%, minus 48%. That's what the standard deviation tells us. It doesn't tell us what's going to happen next year or the year after that. It tells us what are the probabilities of where our return will fall in the next year. We don't know what the return is going to be, but we have a pretty good chance, we have a pretty good knowledge of where it's going to be, somewhere in this graph. So, let's continue. I'm pressing the wrong button. Here are the historical returns, the standard deviations, and the frequency distributions for large company stocks. Again, forget small company stocks. long-term corporate bonds, long-term U.S. bonds, intermediate-term bonds, U.S. Treasury bills, and inflation. And what we see is with the stocks, this is what we'd expect, a much wider distribution, a much larger standard deviation. And as we get closer and closer to the risk-free rate of return, we see that they bunch much more together. Now, these graphs are not done well, folks, and I'll tell you why. Because it makes it look like the numbers are very similar. No. When you get down here, this number is actually much taller. The number for U.S. Treasury bills, that graph, if it were side by side arithmetically, it would look, the numbers in this graph would look much higher than the numbers in the first two graphs. Because those, the frequency of it being around, 4%, 3% is much higher than the frequency of it being around 9, 10%. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, don't worry about it. But just understand that the greater the standard deviation, the wider the distribution of returns and the riskier the investment. And this is what you intuitively know, right? You understand that stocks are risky. Everyone's told you that. I've told you that. But now you see the risk measured the best it can be, which is imperfect. And so why is that important to us? Because as long as we understand and can know that, yeah, some years are not going to be so good, but over time we're going to do well, then we don't panic. Does that make sense? You see, it's good news. Here's another view that you might like, you might not. Slide 45. The idea is, as your standard deviation gets higher, your return gets higher. Remembering that in any one year, exactly. If you like that graph, great. It's from your book. If you like it, if you don't like it, forget about it. But it's the same idea. You want high risk, you want high return, you're going to get high risk. And now, we can come back to our global view of returns. Because before, we just took a look at how well the 18 largest, not largest economies, but the highest per capita income. We looked at the 18 greatest per capita income economies around the world, and we found that Sweden, the Netherlands, Denmark, did a whole lot better than the U.S. But we can complete the global picture regarding risk versus return. Who had the best risk-adjusted return? Yeah, United States. Sweden may have had the best average annual return, but you had to accept almost 60% more risk to get that return. Who had the lowest? Yeah, United States of America. And there's no accident, folks. Our economy is very resilient, very resourceful. People all around the world want to invest in the United States. We tend to take ourselves for granted because we're living here, we're experiencing it. But no, you invest in the United States, you're not going to get the best return, but it's going to be much less volatile, and you're going to be able to sleep a whole lot better at night, even at the times when it's hard to sleep at night. Slide number 47. Okay, does yous got it yet? Yous want high returns? Yous gonna get high risk. You're gonna lose some money and maybe lose all your money, especially if you go into derivatives. And if anybody tells yous differently, they're lying. And you will, folks. It's not if, it's when. You see an advertisement for 12% safe rate of return. You will know that the chances of losing your money are pretty darn high. And you're going to see claims of 300%, 3,000%. How do I know? Because you're going to be, if you get involved in investing, your name's going to get on certain lists. And then these people who are scam artists are going to get your name and try to tell you that, oh yeah, you don't know what you're talking about, don't listen to Piano, you can't do just 10%. If you're not doing 10% a day, then you don't know what you're... Yeah. Sit on your hands, grab your wallet, stay away from these people. Oh, by the way, they're also breaking the law, huh? Don't we have freedom of expression, freedom of speech? Up to a limit. There are certain industries, our industry, investment industry being one of them, where the speech is highly regulated. You just can't tell people you're going to get 300% without showing them they have gotten 300%. And no one's gotten 300%. It just doesn't happen, folks. But people do it all the time. And you're going to see these things advertised on the financial websites, and they're going to send you emails, and they're going to try to sneak into your cell phone. And here are just some of them, folks. And you want to look this guy up, Wade Cook. I don't know if he's out of jail now, I think, but he went to jail, and for years he was gaming the system and screwing people over left and right, and he finally got, actually, I think he got in trouble for tax evasion. And check out Day Trading Coach, Online Trading Academy, Optionetics, which I now think is owned by Tom's Trading Room or something like that. And these people are going to tell you that we're going to teach you how to be the best trader the world has ever seen, and we only want $9,999 to be super, to give you the super secret knowledge, which will. Actually, more of them now are just trying to charge you a couple hundred dollars a month. They realize it's hard for people. It's harder and harder to get people to separate with their $10,000 because they've all got their credit cards already up to the limit. They want you to, yeah. Anyways, let me get off my soapbox. But you understand, if you want high risk, you're going to get high return. I'm sorry, I said it wrong, didn't I? Yeah, if you want high return, you're going to get high. I should start all over. You want high return, you're going to get high risk. And there's going to be times when you're going to lose money. But that's okay. In fact, that's what you want. Huh? Do I want to lose money? No. You want there to be times when there are deals to be had. When the market has fallen, and you can then pick and choose and say, hey, I can buy some great deals on sale. When do you want to buy stuff at the grocery store or at the department store? When it's on sale. When do people want to buy stocks? When they've gone up 180%. Figure that one out, right? And if you're like most of us working grunts, you're not going to be trading these things all day long. You're going to be putting $50, $100, maybe a little bit more into your mutual fund every month. So, wonderful if the market goes down. You got another 30 years. Stick with us, folks. We're going to show you that volatility can be your friend. But, slide 48. Isn't somebody doing it, folks? Isn't somebody making tremendous rates of return? Well, yeah, there are a few people, but those people they're not investors, folks. They are traders. They are speculators. They're not you and me. Maybe some of you are going to become traders and do well. I wish you well. I hope you do well. I can't help you. I mean, I can help you a little bit, but no, I'm not a trader. I'm not a speculator. I don't like gambling. I've never put a dime one arm bandits in a video game slot machine. I never, and I won't. I've never played with options. I won't. I probably, maybe someday when I'm retired and goofing off and just want to lose some money, because that's what's going to happen. Being a trader can be very profitable, but folks, but it's also very stressful, very perilous. You are up against the best in the world, folks. I mean, think about it. Can you hit a fastball at 95 miles an hour? Can you dunk a basketball? Can you hit a little golf ball 400 yards down the fairway in 3 shots? Maybe you can, but most people can't. But there are some people who can do that. There are some people who can sing a 4-hour opera. And they get paid pretty darn well for what they do, right? And that's the same thing in the world of speculation. One of the first traders, was Jesse Livermore. And he wrote some material about it. This is many years ago, folks. Let's read what he has to say. The speculator is not an investor. His object is not to secure a steady return on his money at a good rate of interest, but to profit by either a rise or fall in the price of whatever he may be speculating in. And remember, this was written before he and she. This was written in the 1920s or 30s or so. But the idea is, you're not going to look for a long-term rate of return with income and growth. You're just trying to get in and get out. And who knows, you might be successful. But you probably won't be, because emotions kick in. And that's what Mr. Livermore spent most of his time doing, trying to erase the emotions. But we can't. We're humans. We're not rational, folks. We're very emotional. So you have to ask yourself, let's read at the bottom of this slide. Do you want to be an investor or a speculator? We can help you learn how to become a prudent, patient, successful, long-term investor. Assuming the world doesn't end, right? We can do it, because the tools you will learn in this class will help you. And you will build wealth over time, because you will be able to spot and identify companies that should be around in the next 20, 30, 50 years. And you'll be able to spot companies that may become the next big thing and make you a lot of money, or probably fall into a pool of tears and dissolve. And you will know the difference between the two and plan accordingly. And I will do my best to get you to understand that those companies that could make you rich are probably not going to do that. So hopefully you will decide, you know, for every one hot stock that I buy, I'll buy four Johnson & Johnsons and Home Depots and you understand, and Exxon Mobils. Four companies for every one hot stock that can make you a tremendous amount of money. You ever hear of Go Broke? I'm sorry. What's it called? GoPro, right. Go look up GoPro. We'll look these up later on when we get to Chapter 5, folks. But go look up GoPro. It was the next big thing a few years ago. And now it's... Yeah, so... yeah. Anyway, and so... If you want to be a speculator, a short-term trader, I'm sorry, folks. We cannot help you. I cannot help you. I can do my best to point you in the right direction, but I certainly can't do it. I'll even try. All the companies, and I knew beforehand, folks, and there weren't that many, you know, three, four, really. All the companies that I dabbled in that were the hot things that could turn into, you know, make a lot of money, small companies, they turned out to be busts. So, sorry, I can't help you. But the companies that I invested in for the long term, with, you know, a long history of paying dividends and roots deep in the economy, they've all done well. Thank you very much. And on the website and in Canvas, there is a recitation of a story called Liar's Poker. And that's a wonderful book, but it's from 1980, so it's a little dated. But the writer is fabulous, and you want to, anything by him you want to read, Michael Lewis. He wrote a book called Flash Boys, right? Flash Boys. Is that right? Don't worry, I'll tell you more about it. But he's great. He's a lot great guy to read. A lot of good stuff that he's written. And this one was called Liar's Poker. So you want to listen to that, or go out and get the book at the library and read it. But listen to the story of John Goodfriend, it translates to English, and John Merriweather. These were two of the most powerful men on Wall Street, and they're going at it. And do you want to get in there? Do you want to try to hit that fastball at 95 miles an hour? Do you want to try to... Yeah, I don't. I certainly don't. Because I'm outgunned. I got into that batting cage once at 60 miles an hour, and I quickly got out. And now the batting cages, I think, can do 70. Yeah, I don't want to get hit with a fastball at 95 miles an hour. All right, slide number 48. So what is a realistic rate of return for me? Ah, good question. After you have taken this course, you will have a strong knowledge of the most popular types of investments. Stocks, bonds, cash, mutual funds. You will also know what levels of returns and what levels of risk you should reasonably expect to receive. And if you are a patient, long-term investor, I believe it is realistic to expect 8, 9, 10%. I'm certainly working on it myself. Assuming the world doesn't end, we should do well. In fact, as I've already said, I think the next 20, 30 years are going to be the most prosperous years in the history of the world, and the last 20 or 30 years have been. So I expect to continue. If we don't blow ourselves up, die in our own waste, Ebola comes around, the whole internet crashes and everybody goes screaming for the hills, earthquake, meteorite, tsunami, disco returning. I keep coming back, but you guys didn't live through it, you know. Anyway, so I'm working it on myself, and so far so good. As we will reiterate time and time again, there are no guarantees. Once you leave the world of short-term investments, there are no guarantees. So slide number 50, is 9 or 10% good enough? Well, yes. It turns out the answer to this question is yes. If you start early, if you are patient and consistent, if you don't get too cocky, too greedy, you do not chase after every next big thing that comes along, and most importantly, you do not panic when the market swoons. Because it's going to. We know we're going to have crashes. We don't know when, but we know they're going to happen. The trick is to take advantage of the time value of money, compound annual return. The time value of money on slide 51 is the amount to which a sum you invest now will increase based on a specified rate of return and time period. Calculating amounts in the future is called compounding. That's the future value of money. And we can do it for a single lump sum, a single payment, a lump sum amount, and they all go by the same name, a single principal. Or we can do it for a series of deposits, a stream of I like that term, stream. I like to think of a river. It starts off small, a little trickle, and then it becomes a stream and a river, and finally it becomes the ocean. And we also want you to understand that the term annuity means a stream of deposits. But I don't like to use annuity because annuity is also a product that insurance companies sell. And it turns out it's one of the worst. I mean, it's not a very good investment, in my humble opinion. And remember, I'm not only a stockbroker, I'm an insurance agent. So I can say true things about stockbrokers and insurance agents. And I told you already, if you want insurance, go to an insurance company. If you want investment, don't go to an insurance company. Because they will screw. We will also learn how to move from the future back to the present. That's called discounting. That's called the present value of money. When we learn how to assign valuations to stocks and bonds, that is far more important to us in this class. So you may have taken the Business 121 class, and we spent a whole lot of time on the future value of money. Here, I'm just going to leave these exercises for you as an exercise. See, in the face-to-face class, depending on how much time we have and how much interest there is, we might just go over we might not do them together. We might just show you the answer keys. So they're on the website. They're in Canvas, and you can do them. And if you've already taken Business 121, you know how to do these. And the idea is, folks, if you have a long-term perspective, meaning 20, 30, 40 years, you're young, you're starting off young, you don't need a whole lot of money to invest. Now, if the people in their 40s and 50s that come up to me and say, why didn't you tell me this 25 years ago? And I say, you know, what can I say? And I apologize. That's why we want the young folks to get started early, because the news is good, huh? So check them out, but you don't have to do them. I will not ask you to do them on the exam. I will not ask you to turn them in. They're just for your perusal. We will use the inverse. We'll use the present value soon enough when we get to stocks and then bonds. So one last comment on risk versus return on slide 53. Psst! Here is one of Poyano's secret tips. Avoid large losses. Why? Because the numbers don't work the way you think they do? Take a look at this guy right here. Where would you put $100? Investment A is the next greatest thing. This is going to reinvent the entire world. It's going to be bigger than the internet. I love these ads you see. This is going to be bigger than the internet. Yeah, okay. I believe DNA and biotech is going to be bigger than the internet, but it's happening slower than I thought. But we're going to cure cancer in a few years, folks, so I'm excited. But anyway, this investment does 85% the first year. Investment B, boring, does 10%. Here's boring investment B. Investment A is exciting, attractive investment. And then next year, it goes down 50%, where a boring investment B goes up 9%. So which one would you take, right? Now, if you don't understand what happens when things go down, you might say, well, you know, investment A, you're still up better than investment B, right? Wrong. After the first year, your investment A is worth $185, investment B is worth $110, and then what happens when you go down 50%? Ouch. Yeah, the numbers going down are all a lot worse than the numbers going up. And this is why, as I've already said, we're going to hope that you skew your investment portfolio towards companies that ain't going to go down 50% in 3 days because whatever happened. Are you with me? Okay. Now, before we embark on the process of identifying and familiarizing ourselves with the longer-term, higher-yielding investments, let us learn how and where to park our money using short-term investments. Okay? So our next presentation, the last presentation of Chapter 1, will be concentrating on short-term investments. They're not that hard. We'll get them out of the way, and we'll be done with them. And you know that whenever you need your money in 3, 6, 9 months, or a year or so, or maybe even 2 years, you're stuck. You got to go with these guys. But wait a second. One more time. The greater the variance and standard deviation of the average annual returns of an investment, is it the greater the risk, the more volatile, the lesser the risk, the less volatile? There is no correlation, no relationship whatsoever. Or standard what? I always hated statistics. Statistics. Right, you know what the answer is. The greater the variance, the greater the standard deviation, the greater the risk, the more volatile, the more the probability that you're not going to get what you think you're going to get in any 1 year. Please don't get this one wrong on the exam, please. It's bad for my self-esteem. Okay, so we hope that in these three presentations, we have given you a good view of the investment universe and characteristics of investments and what are investments. And we have inculcated you, like that word, it's a fancy word for meaning, we have immersed you in the eternal struggle of risk versus return. Do you want to eat well or do you want to sleep well? And what we're going to show you is that by learning how to deal with the volatility, we can eat well and sleep reasonably well. So we'll see you in our final presentation for Chapter 1, where we discuss short-term investments, get them out of the way, and then we move on. Thank you. All of us at Southwestern are extremely grateful, proud, honored, and happy that you are with us. And again, I am the luckiest guy in the world to be able to be your instructor in this journey. See ya!